This is Nursing in America. Each week, we speak with incredible nurses from all over the world who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. I am your host, Tanya Friedman. Our topic today is immigration, and I'm joined today by our legal expert panel. I'm joined by Mike Hammond. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hi, Tanya.
And Anshu is joining us. Hi, Anshu. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everybody. Okay, so let's start off with introductions. Anshu, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anshu Anand. I am a partner attorney here at Masola Unkenhall. I've been practicing a little bit over 10 years, and I'm excited to be here today.
Thank you, Anshu. And Anshu, no stranger to the show, so welcome back. Next, Mike, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Mike Hammond. I'm with the firm Hammond Neal Moore. And I've been practicing immigration law a tiny bit longer than Anshu by like at least a week or two.
Mike, and we just love all of those papers. Are those your props, all those papers in your behind you?
I went and scoured offices to bring them in so it looks like I'm doing work. And now
you
caught me. It
looks like you're working, Mike.
Oh, that's so sad you got caught.
Okay, so let's dig in. Hi, I'm Annie Varghese. I'm DQ'd on October 21st, and I'm still waiting for ID in Abu Dhabi. However, many of the Filipino nationals are called for interview after 3 months of DQ. So when can we expect the ID, and who can expedite my case? Annie's question is actually very common these days, where it might feel like maybe some of your batchmates or teammates or other people going through the process seem to be getting their consular interviews. Mike, do you want to comment on Annie's question?
Sure. Yeah, a couple things. First of all, most, if not all, RN cases are being requested for expedite, just as a normal matter of course. And almost all of them are being granted. And when everybody's being granted an expedite, the practical effect of that is nobody is expedited. The processing times for getting an interview do vary greatly based upon the consulate you're at. But if you're at Abu Dhabi and it's been 3 months, that's a little long for what I would consider at Abu Dhabi. And I would think that your case manager or attorney you're assigned to will reach out to the consulate to see if they can figure out why you've not been put in the queue for an interview yet. Abu Dhabi tends to be fairly fast.
Okay. So Annie, we can understand your frustration, your worry, your concern. This process is complicated. It's frustrating. And we know that it can create a lot of anxiety. Can you please explain the latest visa bulletin, and do we need to worry about retrogression? Anshu?
So the November visa bulletin did come out. It essentially remained the same as October visa bulletin. Unfortunately for India EB2, they did see some retrogression just due to high demand, nothing new there. But the good news for worldwide, the rest of the world, and Philippines EB3 is that it remains current. And we expect that these categories are going to be current for the foreseeable future. Another bit of good news is that the State Department just released their annual allotment of employment-based green cards. And instead of the usual 140,000 that we are allotted, it looks like we'll have at least about 200,000. Visas. So that's good news, which is one of the reasons why we don't expect retrogression, at least for worldwide and Philippines, EB3.
Okay, Anshu, good news. Okay, let's move on to a question from Andy. Andy is saying, how long does the immigration process take if you're already passed your NCLEX? Mike?
Well, it depends upon the facility you're going to go to. Now, as I understand it, and Tanya can confirm this, the facilities that Kinetics work with already have prevailing wages in place. Is that correct, Tanya?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and so that means if you're working with an agency like Tanya's who already has facilities lined up with prevailing wages in place, you're saving about 7 months, maybe 8 months off of the process that normally someone would go to if you're being recruited to a facility that does not have a prevailing wage in place. So we start with the fact that Kinetics candidates are already 7 to 8 months ahead of the game. You've now passed your NCLEX exam. As I understand it also, all of Kinetics cases are done under premium processing.
Correct.
Which means instead of a process that's taking 10 months or so at an I-140, maybe 12, they're taking about 3 weeks. So the USCIS part of this process from beginning to end is less than 2 months for probably 95% of the candidates.
Okay, good. Thank you, Mike. So that's really helpful for Andy. Andrew, we have a question here from Louis. I'm thinking of coming to the United States to study on a student visa. Can you explain what an F1 is and an OPT?
Sure. So an F1 is a student visa that is allows you to come to the United States and study in a degree-seeking program. The process is pretty straightforward. You just need to reach out to, well, first you need to find the program that you're interested in, and then apply to the school. The school will then issue you what's called an I-20. And then with that I-20, along with a few additional documentation, you will then make an appointment with the U.S. Embassy for an F-1 visa. You will then come to the U.S. on the F-1 visa. You will go to your school, pursue your program. And then once you finish your program, every school that's accredited will allow what the USCIS allows for F1 students once they finish their program to engage in what's called OPT, optional practical training. And that's the ability to be able to work in your field after you graduate. And the good news there is if you are, seeking to permanently reside in the U.S., what I tend to see is a lot of students will get on their OPT and then they will find an employer that's willing to sponsor them for a green card. And so that's kind of the pathway that a lot of students take is that they come here, they study, they get their degree, and then they pursue OPT. And while they're pursuing their OPT and working, then the sponsor can then file their green card and then move forward from there.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that, Andrew. And at Kinetics USA, we have many students that we've got green cards for. Mike, did you want something to add?
Yeah, let me add something to that, going back to the visa bulletin that was put up earlier. If you are a individual from India or China, the path of coming as a student is available to you, and the path of getting OPT is available to you. But the path of staying while waiting for green card sponsorship is not available to you because the line is too long. So the fact that your hospital that you work for on your OPT sponsors you for a green card, all they can sponsor you for is the first stage, which is referred to as the I-140. And then you would have to go home and wait in the queue. And it's obviously so long that I find it would be very unlikely that anyone would do that. So that path works great for any countries other than India and China.
Okay, so we actually have a question. Thank you for raising that, Mike, because we have a question here from Avanti, who actually is that exact question. So I'm gonna add that one in here. Avanti says, I'm an Indian who got her BSN from the US and currently on OPT. I have my US nursing license. So Avanti's question is the USCIS accepting H1 and green card filings for Indian nurses? So, Mike, you've answered the question about the green card, but what about an H1 for a nurse like Avanti?
Yeah, generally, the positions of a registered nurse are not H1B level positions. To get an H1B, not only must you have a BSN, but also the position must require a BSN as the standard in the state you're in, the standard in the U.S., the standard at that specific hospital. So there are no states in the U.S. any longer that require a BSN for licensure. It's certainly not the industry standard. There are a few limited hospitals where they could demonstrate that a BSN is their standard, and they could sponsor you for an H-1, but there's not very many. Certain other higher level nurses can get an H-1, like a certain specialty, like a nurse practitioner, nurse educator. They generally have master's degrees or higher advanced degrees, but they can. But generally, there's not an option once you've done your OPT. So most individuals would be looking at either Canada, Australia, or back home or somewhere in Europe or someplace else that is more immigration friendly, regardless of nationality.
Okay, so there you go, Avanti. I'm sorry that it's not great news there, but at least you know where you stand. And for anybody else who's in a similar situation to Avanti.
We'll be back with the conversation in just a second. There's a wonderful opportunity for you. AMN Healthcare Network is currently recruiting registered nurses around the world to live and work in the United States. To learn more and apply, go to amnhealthcare.com/international. That's amnhealthcare.com/international. On with the show.
Okay, Anshu, we have a question here from Godwin. Godwin is saying, I received an email from the U.S. Embassy giving me a list of documents that I should bring with me on the day of the interview. I don't have two items yet from the list, the original updated job offer from the employer and the employment contract from the employer. I think these are the same. Those are the exact words. I'm not sure if the employment letter would suffice for both. Andrew, can you clarify for nurses going to the embassy what they need in order to be able to comply with the requirements?
Sure. So when you went through the NVC process, you had to have submitted documentation that the NVC requires in order to allow you to be documentarily qualified. Those documents will now, in their original form, you should carry those with you to the embassy. So those documents include like your passport, your marriage certificate, birth certificate, police clearances, if you have any, an offer letter. You'll also need to get a medical exam. So those are the kinds of documents that you'll need to take with you to the embassy. And in Godwin's situation, I think you should try to get the contract and try to get the letter. If you don't feel like you can get the originals in time, then at least ask for a scanned copy from your sponsors so that at least you have something in hand. And obviously, you know, if the officer that's interviewing you has an issue with the documentation that you have, they can issue a 221G, at which point you can supply that documentation at a later time.
Okay. So thank you for that, Anshu. So Godwin, best wishes for the consulate interview. Anshu, is there anything happening to NVC Texas? It's been 3 months waiting to be DQ. This is something that we are seeing at the moment, some delays from the Texas Service Center.
Anshu? Yes. So we've actually seen a lot of improvement, particularly out of the Texas Service Center. I know a couple of months ago, there was definitely a delay. We've seen an improvement. I would say if your case has not shipped from the service center, from the Texas Service Center to the NBC within about 60 to 70 days, that you should reach out to your attorney who can actually reach out to the service center to see exactly what it is that's going on. Particularly if you have filed the case premium processing, there's a way for us to reach out to the premium processing unit specifically to see exactly what it is, what the holdup is, and why the case hasn't been shipped to the NBC.
Okay. And Catherine, we feel your pain. There was a small number of nurses that we had at the Kinetics as well that had delays at the beginning part of this year with the Texas Service Center. We are seeing progress, so that is the good news. There seems to be a lot of efforts, to get this hiccup, this delay rectified. And in addition to what Andrew just mentioned, we also from Kinetics are working with a lot of the government affairs departments at the various hospitals where nurses are at the service center to flag these cases and get them moving in the process. So Catherine, hopefully it won't be too long, but we understand your frustration. We are equally as frustrated about this that recent hiccup. May Angeline is asking, is this live also applicable for medical technologists? May, yes, definitely. In fact, we have a show coming up in a few weeks dedicated to medical technologists. So please watch out for that. Mike, do you want to explain to any medical technologists the process that a med tech can come to the United States on from an immigration perspective?
Sure. There's essentially three routes that a med tech could take. Two of them involve an H-1B. One involves a green card. So the two routes to take for an H-1B worker is whether or not they're going to what's referred to as a cap-exempt employer or not. There's only a certain number of H-1s given out per year. They're done through a lottery. The lottery starts in January, February. We do filings in February. And then at the end of March, we find out whether you were chosen in the lottery. And then there's a 90-day window to file. And then you can come in October 1st. There's 85,000 spots. Last year, there were almost 600,000 filings. Now, that doesn't really mean 600,000 people. They actually chose 125,000 or a little more than 125,000 for the 85,000 spots because they know there's a lot of duplication of people. But the bottom line is your odds of being chosen in the lottery are not that great. But that is certainly one route. And a lot of facilities will put med techs in the lottery for the purposes of hoping that they are chosen and then file, and then that's the fastest way to get here to the U.S. If, however, your hospital that's going to hire you is what's referred to as a cap-exempt hospital, and those are hospitals that are nonprofits affiliated with universities, so typically a university hospital, and there's not a lot of them, but there are some. Probably associated with most major universities, there is a nonprofit affiliated hospital. Those types of hospitals are exempt from that H-1B lottery. So if you happen to be hired by one of those hospitals, then instead of waiting till January and February to file your H-1 lottery case and hoping you get lucky in April, you can go ahead and file now. And you could theoretically be here in a few months. And the third route is a green card. And a lot of facilities, particularly for-profit facilities, who don't want the pressure and the stress and the of the H-1 lottery, which is certainly an unsure process, they will simply start doing green card processing like they might would with an RN overseas. But for a med tech, even though they have the H-1 option, unfortunately, RNs are treated special in the green card process in that they are exempt from what's called a labor test. Med techs have to go through a labor test, and that labor test is required by the Department of Labor before you ever file with immigration, and the hospital has to demonstrate, or the lab, that there is a shortage of U.S. workers at med tech workers in that particular geographical area. So they have to go through a whole series of recruitment. Bottom line is, depending upon the facility, that extra time could be as short as maybe 6-7 months extra from what an RN would go through to maybe as long as about 16 or 18 months. So it's significantly longer for a med tech to come through the green card process. But it certainly is possible. And, over the last several years, as the number of H-1 filings have gone up, I've seen an increase in a lot of my clients looking to go the green card route for med techs. But bottom line, there are ways to get here as a med tech. A lot of it just depends on the hiring facility that you're going to, and also some of your personal choices.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. That's very helpful. And we really hope that, May Angeline, that clarifies your question. As I said, please keep watching Onwards and Upwards. We have a show coming up that's dedicated to medtechs. We're seeing a very big increase of facilities that are now looking for looking internationally for medical technologists. So we're really excited to be able to present lots of opportunities to medtechs who are interested. Anshu, good day. Once I work in US, when is the best time to start petitioning my parents?
So you can only petition your parents once you are a US citizen. So you can apply for citizenship once you've been here as a legal permanent resident in the US for 5 years. There's a couple of other criteria you have met, such as having a continuous presence here in the US. And also just making sure that there's no kind of criminal background issue. And then you would file for citizenship. Once you become a citizen, it takes about 6 to 12 months to become a citizen after that 5-year mark. And then you can apply for your parents.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Nursing in America. Part 2 will be available next week, so make sure you hit the follow button and come back to join us then. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us and leave a review. AMN Healthcare International is currently recruiting registered nurses around the world to live and work in the United States. We offer both direct hire and staff recruitment, giving you more options and flexibility to begin your American dream. To learn more and apply, go to amnhealthcare.com/international. There's also a link in the description. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week for more incredible conversations.